Chapter 35, The Heroes of Ireland. We already told you in Chapter 31 that various Germanic tribes dwelt in the Netherlands. Before the great migration of nations, among others the Batavians dwelt in the Betua, and the Frisians in the north of that country, the Caninifits in the dunes in the west, the Merisits in Zeeland, and the Tubentes in the east. This changed because of the migration of nations. New tribes penetrated into that country. After this, we no longer hear anything of these original tribes, except the Frisians, who maintained themselves. They lived in the north and in the west. The Saxons settled in the east, and the Franks in the south. Probably through marriages and mingling, the old inhabitants were absorbed in the new inhabitants. Thus they have mingled themselves with the new inhabitants. But even though the inhabitants of the Netherlands changed, one thing did not change. Before the great migration of nations, heathenism prevailed in Holland. After the migration, heathenism still prevailed. And not only in Holland, but also in most other countries of Western Europe, the ancient Germanic gods were served and worshipped. Heathenism reigned supreme almost everywhere. It is true, Christianity was well known in the south of France. Just think of Blandina. But the northern countries were almost entirely submerged in the power of heathenism. Various gods were worshipped by them. Ah, we know them, do we not? Their chief god was Woden. Besides, they worshipped Donar, the god of thunder, Thor, the god of war, Freyda, the goddess of love, etc. Images? No, at first the Germanic tribes did not know of images. The images did not come till later. Perhaps they observed the making of images by the Romans, for they did have images for their various gods. The Germanics worshipped their gods in the sacred forests. Their offerings were brought there to incline their gods to be favorable toward them. Therewith they endeavored to avert the threatening disasters. Those offerings had to serve so that the gods would give them the victory in the countless wars which they waged. In those sacred forests, the heathen priests foretold the future. They could pretendedly read this from the intestines of the slain sacrificial animals. There they kept their feasts and their banquets, where often it was very rough. Neither did the Germanics know of stone or wood temples. Their sacred forests were their temples. In that way our ancestors lived for ages. Those times were so cruel, so rough. A human life had little value to them. Thus, outwardly, they lived peacefully and contentedly. But that was only seemingly. However, in reality, their life was embittered by fear and dread. Those stalwart Germanics, who seemingly feared for nothing, who undauntedly defied death while rushing upon their enemies, yet lay awake nights for hours on a stretch, filled with unspeakable fear during the stormy autumn nights when the moon haunted among the forward-driven clouds. The shrill screech of a night owl in the stillness of the night made them tremble. The least rustling of a sleeping bird on the roof of their humble hut caused them to shrink with horror in their rough bearskin in which they were wrapped. What were they so afraid of? Why did they wince and tremble at the least unusual noise? Their entire life was filled with fear of the evil spirits, because these poor heathens believed that the earth, the water, and the air were filled with good and evil spirits, and no spears and sharp-pointed clubs availed against those evil spirits. Heroism and contempt of death did not help against them. They were powerless against that. During those long sleepless nights, they looked longingly for the rising of the sun, which would drive away all those evil spirits. When they slept, then they were often tormented by disquieting dreams. Then, unconsciously, they groped with their sturdy fist for spear and club. They also feared the souls of the departed tribesmen, because they thought that these could harm them. For that reason, they faithfully celebrated their feasts of the dead. Offerings were also brought for the dead. In that way, they endeavored to incline the spirits of the dead favorably toward them. Hence, it is not surprising that the priests and the priestesses had great influence upon the common people. They were very powerful, and often they abused that power. Also, much superstition prevailed among the Germanics. Sorcerers and witches were feared by them. They, too, had to be kept as friends. Poor, poor people. They knew no better. Danger lurked everywhere. Death grinned at them everywhere. No, not the glorious death on the battlefield, but the dishonorable death. Terror all around. But they did not know the only true God, the Creator of heaven and earth, was unknown to them. They had never heard of the Lord Jesus. They also believed in a heaven, but not as we. Their heaven was Valhalla. There they would continue their earthly life, but then without fear. There they would hunt upon the eternal hunting grounds. There they would drink beer out of the skulls of the conquered and defeated enemies. But the eternal glory, where God shall wipe away all tears and where God shall be glorified, was completely unknown to them. They lived as heathens, and they died as heathens. Oh, to be sure, they were hospitable. The stranger found a safe shelter in their simple hut. Never did anyone knock at their door in vain. They were honest. They never stole from each other. Woe to him who made himself guilty of that. They were also trustworthy. If they had once given their word, then they would not break their promise. That promise was sacred to them. But, on the other hand, they could be unspeakably cruel. They were cruel toward their enemies, who were vanquished by them. Brute force prevailed in the many bloody wars which were waged with each other, especially when they had drunken much beer, and they liked to drink beer. Then they did not know mercy. And then they spared no one. At times they were cruel toward their own wives and children. When they were flushed by drinking much beer and were gambling with each other, then at times they gambled away their wives and children, so that these were carried away as slaves, sometimes to the farm of a good neighbor with whom they lived in friendship. Yea, it has happened that they also gambled themselves away. Did they work hard for their family? Oh no, the men did not work. Their work was hunting, fishing, gambling, and drinking beer. Did they till the ground, take care of their cattle? Their wives and the slaves must do that. Really, the Germanic women did not have it easy. They had to keep house, take care of the children, of the field, and of the cattle. Too much to mention. What about the slaves? Ah, at times they were treated like animals. Yea, even worse, the life of a slave was of no account at all. But yet, these slaves were also people, created for a never-ending eternity. They also had a soul to lose. Yet, who would interest themselves in the portion of those miserable ones? It seemed to be impossible to bring a change in that. They were some of those national customs which could not be meddled with. And yet, a change did come. Those cruel heathen people have nevertheless finally bent their knees before the living God, the Creator of heaven and earth. They finally bid farewell to their idols. Later on, psalms and hymns resounded, sung to the glory of God, at those places where formerly they used to celebrate their rough heathen feasts. Did that come about all at once? Why, no, it lasted ages before heathenism had disappeared from those countries. Many times the conflict was violent and horrible between heathenism and intrusive Christianity. But Christianity has conquered. God planted his church in those countries. The raging of the Prince of Darkness to prevent that was of no avail. Naturally, we would like to know how that came about, isn't that so? Well then, listen. I shall not tell you everything about it, but I shall tell you certain things, and then we shall see that God's ways are wonderful, that nothing is too wonderful for the Lord, but that He is the Almighty One. A young man of about 16 years of age wanders with a flock of sheep over the vast plains in Ireland. While grazing calmly, the flock moves on. Ah, that young shepherd is not very busy. As long as he sees to it that the sheep do not wander away, and that the flock keeps together, he need not do anything else. For that reason, he has much time to reflect. At times, when the flock lies down to chew the cud, he also stretches himself out full length in the grass, and then he thinks, reflects, and ponders. No, there are no pleasant thoughts which keep him busy. Just watch him. At times he sighs deeply, and his eyes are filled with tears. Then again, when in seclusion, he folds his hands and prays. Who is that young man? Why is he so sad since he has such a peaceful, easy life? He walks or lies down there for hours, staring in the wide distance, and when finally the evening descends upon the Irish country, then while sighing he turns around, drives the flock to the sheepcote, looks for his humble hut, and stretches himself out upon the straw. But sleep departs far from him. Restlessly he turns himself around and around upon the rustling straw. At times he raises himself, bends his knees, and prays. But who shall hear the anxious sighs of that boy? Who sees the hot tears which he sheds? Who hears the stammering words which he utters in a whisper? Indeed, no one. When he finally dozes off, being dead tired of all his worrying and thinking, and then he dreams about the dreadfulness which has happened, and often he startles up wildly with a fearful cry, with both arms warding off and raised up. But what really is the trouble? By what fearful memories is that boy tormented? What has happened during his life, and that he is filled so much with? That young man's name is Patrick, or Patricus. We shall just call him Patrick. He was a slave. He was not born in slavery. Oh, no. He is not yet very long in Ireland. How different it was formerly in the home of his father and mother. His father and mother? The tears well up anew in his eyes. Shall he ever see them again? How much sorrow he has caused them. At the thought of that, he closes his eyes. He still sees before him the sorrowful face of his mother. He actually lived in Scotland. He was the son of a deacon, and probably his parents came originally from France. His father and mother were Christians. It is not known why they moved from France to Scotland. How often have they admonished him because he continued to live in great indifference? He did not concern himself very much about religion. Why, no, he was still young, and life was before him. For that reason, he cast their serious warnings to the wind. Secretly, he laughed at it. One day he and his little sisters were walking along the Scottish beach. Perhaps they were playing. Suddenly a gang of Irish pirates appear from around the corner of the beach. Since they are too close, it is impossible to escape them. Both little girls are roughly taken hold of and dragged along. Their terrified cries for help resound far and wide. With eyes large from fright, Patrick beholds all this. He is, as it were, rooted to the ground. Then he wants to run to the assistance of his two sisters, but a thudding bludgeon stroke upon his head causes him to fall unconscious to the ground. When he regains his consciousness, he is securely bound and altogether powerless, delivered up to the pirates. The Irish pirates take him to Ireland, and there they sell him as a slave to a chief. He does not know what has become of his little sisters or where they were taken. Now, day by day, he must tend the sheep, and he wanders over the vast Irish grassy plains. Behold, that is what troubles him. It is that which he broods and ponders about. His mother's admonitions still sound in his ears. If he had only listened to her. But that is now too late. Now the Lord is punishing him for his indifference. Now perhaps he must spend his entire life in slavery. Now he repents because of his former wicked life. He prays for forgiveness of his great offenses. If he could only ask his mother to forgive him. Many times he sighs, O God, if ever I may become free again, then I shall spend the rest of my life in thy service. Then I shall go and preach the gospel to those that do not know thee. At times he becomes despondent. Ah, shall God ever answer his prayers? He does not know. He has given reasons if the Lord should never look at him. Then fearful doubts creep into his heart. The weeks follow one another. The months hasten on. they become years. And yet, God did hear the fearful sighs of that young man. He saw the hot tears which he wept. At God's time, those prayers would be answered. When after 6 years, 6 long years, he has been active as a slave, then he has an opportunity to escape from the house of his master. Surrounded by numerous dangers, he succeeds in leaving Ireland. Soon he walks upon Scottish soil again. What must have passed in his mind? Be assured that he thanked the Lord for his successful flight. Behold, there he enters the parental home again. There he falls upon his mother's neck, who had become gray because of grief. What a meeting again! How happy were those parents when their son, whom they supposed to be dead, returned so unexpectedly. They had not reckoned on that anymore. Their joy became still greater when they saw what a great change had taken place with their child. How wonderful are God's ways, isn't that so? Here was fulfilled that God is a hearer and answerer of prayers. In the year 432 after Christ, a company of strangers step ashore in Ireland. Calmly they advance deeper into the country. The vast wide plain lies before them. In the distance a flock of sheep is grazing. But when the boy who is tending the sheep sees them, then he frightens terribly. For a moment the shepherd stands there as rooted to the ground. But then he hurriedly turns around, and with great leaps he runs away. He imagines that those strangers are a gang of pirates, and he goes quickly to get help. It does not take long before a group of heavily armed Irishmen come running. They shall either kill those strange intruders or put them to flight. They shall endeavor to save their possessions. But these men do not flee, but they calmly remain standing. And when the Irish chief comes close to them, then he notices that these strangers are no pirates, because they are unarmed. He need not fear these people. The chief walks up to them and invites them to go with him to his farm, where they are kindly received. However, his amazement becomes even greater when one of those strangers addresses him in the Irish language. "Say, how is that? Is that man who is unknown to him an Irishman?" "No, not that. He is a Scot. But Ireland is well known to him. As a shepherd, for 6 long years, he has also wandered about the Irish plains. This part of the country is not strange to him." "Ah, now we understand, isn't that so? That stranger is Patrick." "Exactly, so it is." Patrick, who as a slave had promised that if he ever again regained his liberty, he would spend the rest of his life in the service of the Lord, has by grace kept his promise. After his unexpected homecoming, he has studied hard for several years in Scotland, and then with 24 assistants, he went to Ireland to preach the gospel to the Irish heathens. At the Irish farm, where he had such a hospitable reception, he has spoken about Christ, who came to make lost people happy, who came to save lost sinners. He has preached in Ireland with unwearied zeal. He traveled from village to village and from city to city. With the roll of drums, he He called people together, and then he brought them the joyful message of the gospel. And the Irish people listened attentively to him because they were addressed in Irish, their own language. The Lord has richly blessed that labor. The Lord joined that work with his spirit. Patrick also composed many songs in which he related how Christ came into this world in a cattle stable, songs in which he related the great work of redemption. He sang those songs to the same tunes to which the Irish sang their many heathen songs. Then they listened with still greater attention than otherwise. Then it was breathlessly quiet. That preaching bore much fruit. Through that preaching, many Irishmen, chiefs as well as common people, were brought to repentance. They forsook their heathen idolatry and had themselves baptized. Everywhere Patrick built churches and founded monasteries in which thousands of monks lived. There have been monasteries in which 3,000 monks lived. As a father, Patrick provided for them. These monks did not spend their time in idleness. Oh no, on the contrary. Early in the morning, while the dew was still upon the fields, large groups of monks left the monastery on the way to waste barren land. Then they dug up that soil, chopped down shrubs and trees, toiled from early in the morning till late in the evening, and in that way they made fruitful fields. Late in the evening they returned, tired but satisfied. Others copied good books and translated them into the Irish language, so that the Irish that had learned to read could read them. Who shall determine how much rich fruit also that labor has yielded? Only God knows that. Others again studied from early in the morning till late in the evening, and when they had studied sufficiently, then they went into the heathen world to also bring the word of God and the gospel to other peoples. No, those Irish monks were not lazy. At that time, the Irish monasteries were a blessing to the country, if that had only remained that way. As missionaries, those Irish monks have labored with much blessing. They set out in groups of 13 men. One was the leader, and the other 12 were his assistants. They set out joyfully to face the dangers, yea, even death. Once, in the day of days, it shall become manifest what fruits their labor has borne. Then it shall become manifest for how many this has been an eternal blessing. Eternity shall make mention of it. Irish monks crossed over to England and made that a Christian country. I shall mention a few of those Irish missionaries. I will not tell you their entire life's history, for then this church history would become far too extensive. But neither is that necessary. A certain Columba, the elder, set out with 12 assistants from Ireland to Scotland, and there he has preached with much blessing. He founded monasteries everywhere and built churches where the baptized Scots could meet to conduct their religious services. There he labored for many years. He had to face many dangers, but nothing could discourage him. For that reason, Columba the Elder is often called the Apostle of Scotland. Another Irish monk named Columbanus or Columban the Younger set out in the year 580 at the age of 30 years with 12 assistants to the land of the Franks. At that time, the Frankish Empire was already a Christian country. We shall tell you in the following chapters how that came to pass. But when Columban the Younger set foot on the shore of the Frankish Empire, then he observed already a sad decline among the Frankish Christians. The monks in the Frankish monasteries made themselves guilty of gross sins, and by that a bad example was set to the people. Columban the Younger preached with great earnestness against those sins, but he was opposed everywhere. The enmity became manifest against his serious preaching. They caused him and his assistants to suffer want, for, having been instigated by the Frankish monks, no one would supply them with food. At times they had no other food but tree bark and wild herbs, we would say weeds. However, when the distress had reached its height, then the Lord gave deliverance. Someone sent him several horses laden with foodstuffs. How happy he must have been with that! It was proof to him that the God of Elijah still lived. However, the enmity of the Frankish monks remained, yea, their hatred toward that faithful preacher increased steadily. One day he was made a prisoner, but he managed to escape out of the prison. Alas, soon after they seized him again. They wanted to get rid of him, and for that reason they took him to the Frankish coast. A skipper, who just happened to be there with his ship in the harbor, was charged to bring Columban the Younger, with his assistants, back to Ireland. What a setback! But, behold, suddenly a violent storm arose. Wild, roaring waves beat against the tender vessel, and at that place the sea can be very boisterous. It becomes distressful weather. The ship is at the mercy of the waves. The skipper fears that he shall drown. He beholds the avenging hand of God in this exceptional, violent storm. Hastily he returns to the harbor, which he had just left. A little while later, Columban the Younger steps again on the shore in the land of the Franks. The attempt of the Frankish monks to get rid of that missionary fails. Are now Columban and his assistants sad and downhearted on account of all this? Do they now abandon their difficult task? Why, no, not a bit of it. With undiminished zeal, he begins to preach again. He defies the hatred and the opposition of those hypocritical Frankish monks. Finally, he leaves the country of the Franks with his faithful companions and travels to Switzerland. There he remains for 3 years. But opposition is his portion also there. And after laboring there 3 years, he flees to the Lombards in Italy. He finally dies there in peace. Indeed, we may reckon him among the heroes of Ireland. That man sacrificed much for the truth. What a life full of changes, full of cares, troubles, and sorrow lay behind him. After his death, his assistants continued the labors. They arrived at the savage, uncivilized Alemanni. We shall hear more about those people in the following chapter. The gospel was also brought to those Alemanni. In this way, I could continue for quite a while. Oh, how much have those Irish missionaries done? They have spent their life in the service of the Lord. They have scattered the seed everywhere, which at God's time would bear rich fruits, because that labor has not been in vain. Their names may and must be honorably mentioned. All that has been the blessed fruit of the preaching of Patrick in Ireland, with which we commenced this chapter. Is it then surprising that Patrick is called the Apostle of Ireland? He deserves that name, that honorable name. Finally, Patrick died at the age of more than 100 years. Then that tireless preacher entered into eternal glory. Of him it may be truthfully said, "Blessed are the dead which die in the Lord from henceforth, and their works do follow them." Patrick and all the Irish missionaries were not subject to the influence of the Pope of Rome. What a pity that soon thereafter England and also Ireland did come under the power of Rome. Do you want to know how that happened? Well, then we shall briefly tell you something about that. In chapter 32, we told you about Gregory the Great, the powerful Pope of Rome. We still remember that, do we not? Otherwise, you can read that chapter once more. Indeed, he was the man who introduced the most abominable errors into the Roman Catholic Church. He was the man that abused his great gifts which God had given him, was he not? Well, then, that Pope has done much, very much, for the mission. He sent an abbot of a monastery with 40 monks to England to bring Christianity there. That abbot's name was Augustine. But remember that here not Augustine the church father is intended, who was bishop of Hippo, a town in North Africa. This abbot Augustine, who had been sent by Gregory to England, was a different man. Well, then, in the year 596, this Augustine, with his 40 assistants, arrives in England, and there he brings Christianity. His work is also greatly blessed. Many, very many, have themselves baptized. And now we must pay strict attention for a moment. Hence, there were now two churches in England. One was the Irish Church, which was founded by the followers of Patrick. The other was the Roman Catholic Church, which was founded by the abbot Augustine and his assistants. The Irish Church did not acknowledge the Pope. The Irish Church was entirely free from the Pope and from Rome. The Irish Church would have nothing to do with that. Naturally, Augustine did acknowledge the Pope, for he had just been sent by Pope Gregory to Christianize England, which means to make a Christian nation of a heathen land. Soon a disagreement arose between those two churches. That couldn't be otherwise, could it? The Irish Church continued to refuse to acknowledge the Pope. That disagreement became open hostility. Everywhere in England, the Roman Catholic Church opposed the Irish Church. I could tell you much about that religious struggle, but I will not do that because that is rather difficult. Only remember that after a struggle of many years, the Roman Catholic Church has won out over the Irish Church. What an awful pity that was. England became Roman Catholic. Scotland became Roman Catholic. Yea, even Ireland, the land of Patrick, finally also became Roman Catholic. Finally, the Irish Church also acknowledged the Pope of Rome as the head of Christ's Church here upon earth. With that, the purity of the Irish Church was also lost, because all the errors of Rome were also introduced there. Ages later, England and Scotland have made themselves free from Rome. Later, we will hear more about that. But it is noteworthy that even to this day, the Irish people have remained Roman Catholic. But I will not tell you more about that just now. Later, we hope to tell you how the Reformation has strongly penetrated into England and Scotland. Also there, God has planted his church by renewal. Also there, God has delivered his church from the power of Rome.